Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a great episode for you today. We're going to talk about a lot of the biggest free agent signings from the past few days, including Gordon Hayward to the Celtics, Paul Millsap to the Nuggets, Danilo Gallinari to the Clippers, and George Hill to the Kings. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you that you could follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Though a lot of the big free agent signings have already come and gone, we still have a bunch of restricted free agents on the market. Derrick Rose is still out there, so there's a lot of free agencies still to happen. We're also covering Summer League. Zach Harper of FanRag is at the Utah Summer League right now. Just posted a great piece on Markelle Fultz. So check all of that out at FanRag Sports. Joining me today, as always, is my trusty co-host, Morten Jensen. Mort, how's it going?
I'm slightly disappointed, Brian, because you called my love for Donovan Mitchell irrational on Twitter yesterday.
You have him as the third best player in this draft class. I'm standing by irrational.
We'll see, Brian. We'll see.
That's true. He did look good as he eliminated or set my Sixers down to 0-2. My poor summer Sixers.
And because we can talk about this in contrast to Gordon Hayward leaving and George Hill leaving, he's going to have plenty of opportunities in Utah now.
He is. So before we go into the Gordon Hayward nonsense, our third co-host, Sarah Chalea, could not join us today. She will hopefully be back. We're planning on doing another episode this weekend, knock on wood, where we do a bigger picture focus on free agency, kind of the big winners and losers. So today, we're just going to focus on, you know, a lot of the big news that happened since we last recorded on Saturday, I believe. So as you mentioned, Mort, Gordon Hayward's the biggest one. On the 4th of July, news leaked around noon Central Time that Chris Haynes of ESPN was the first to report that he was going to be signing with the Celtics. His agent went to Haynes' colleague, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, and said, no decision has been made. So for the next like 5 hours, everyone is just refreshing Twitter constantly trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Finally, around 5:45 Central Time, Gordon Hayward posts his inevitable Players Tribune article, says, "Thank you, Utah. I'm peacing. I'm joining my college coach, going to Boston on a 4-year, $128 million max deal, fourth-year player option." So, because the salary cap came in at $99 million instead of $101 million, the Celtics now are in a little bit of trouble because they cannot afford Gordon Hayward at that price point. As is, they need to trade one of Marcus Smart, Jay Crowder, or Avery Bradley. So they are working toward that goal right now. There's discussion about maybe doing a sign-in trade with the Jazz with Jay Crowder, just to clear out the requisite cap space to sign Hayward. So, Morten, I want to ask you a couple things about this Hayward thing. So let's go from the Jazz perspective first. The sentiment, especially once word trickled out that they might do a sign-in trade, there were a few Jazz beat reporters who basically said, you know, that's the least Hayward could do is, you know, orchestrate the sign-in trade, get Crowder back to Utah. He owes the Jazz that much, especially after how Tuesday went. Do you buy into that sentiment?
No, that's pretty harsh. Just because you have like a malfunction in your communication doesn't mean that you should just bend over and do everything to get the Jazz's starting caliber player just because of it. Like, I would agree that it would be a nice thing to do because he did give up a lot of years in, or he did play a lot of years in Utah and left them for essentially nothing. And I'm always a big proponent of teams getting something for their player who's going to leave. And having said that, you know, Jay Crowder is like a small forward, power forward. They seem to have plenty of those in Boston. So if there's anything Boston could afford to lose, it's probably a forward. Not that they should necessarily. If Boston could get out of it and, you know, trade Marcus Smart or something instead and get under the cap to the point that they can sign Hayward outright, then that would be my priority. Then Crowder would come at a later date because I don't think there's a spot for him.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, they do have a logjam, especially Jaylen Brown, their number three pick from last year, Jason Tatum, their number three pick this year. They have a bunch of forwards. So, like, position-wise, Crowder is their least needed of the three. That said, he's the only one locked up beyond 2017-18. Yep. Smart and Bradley. Smart will be restricted free agent. Bradley will be unrestricted. Crowder, meanwhile, is on one of the best contracts in the NBA. So, for that reason, you might not want to trade him, and you might want to keep him around as a small ball four. So, going back to the, does Hayward owe the Jazz anything? Hell no, he doesn't owe the Jazz anything. Like, he gave them 7 years of his career. You know, I hate to go back to this, because this led to a ridiculous conversation on Twitter yesterday, but back in 2013, they were negotiating an extension with him. And according to Mark Stein, who was with ESPN at the time, Hayward wanted an extension at $13 million. The Jazz wouldn't budge from $12 million. So a $1 million difference. They couldn't reach an extension. He instead goes to restricted free agency. He signs an offer sheet with the Charlotte Hornets. You know, the deal that he was on. 4 years, fourth-year player option. Utah matches. If Utah doesn't do that, if Utah gives him an extra $1 million, you know, 4 years ago, he's still a part of the Jazz because he's not going to have that fourth year player option in all likelihood.
Right.
And then at that point, you know, maybe he was going to leave no matter what. Maybe he just wanted a new challenge. But if we're really to believe that the Brad Stevens connection is what drew him to Boston, Boston's going to be, you know, it's going to be far more difficult for Boston to add a big name free agent next summer when you have to deal with Bradley, Smart, Isaiah Thomas all getting new contracts than it was this summer when they had close to $30 million.
Yeah.
So, like, spare me the sorrow about Utah. I know it sucks that he leaves, but, like, he doesn't, you know, he played 7 years there. And if you really wanted to keep him around, you wouldn't have haggled over $1 million 4 years ago.
I would agree. There's nothing to say there. I mean, yeah, it's not looking at the long game at all, mm-hmm. especially over a $1 million difference. Look, they knew that they would risk he going to restricted free agency. Like, he was undoubtedly going to get a large contract above, you know, what they offered anyway. So mm-hmm. it just they could have nipped it in the bud and just offered the extra mil and just be done with it. I mean, look, the Bulls and Jimmy Butler, same thing. You know,
yeah,
They insisted that he should get, like, I think it was $45 million, and he wanted mm-hmm. 50. Like, yeah. Could you imagine Jimmy Butler being extended before he broke out? Averaging something around $11 million a year, or earning $11 million a year, that would mm-hmm. be the league's best contract. So there is definitely value for NBA teams to lock up players beforehand if it turns out that that sort of guy is going to be cheap for an extended period of time, and the Jazz just didn't. And it sucks. Like, I thought Hayward was actually going to stay in Utah. I thought the connection there was legitimate. That's harsh. I think the connection there was legitimate. Mm-hmm. I just think he saw greener pastures, like, literally.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, that, you look at what the West has done this offseason. Mm-hmm. Look at the talent flood or influx from the East to the West. You know, if you're looking at building a legacy, Gordon Hayward, like, we just saw in the West and Utah, he didn't make the All-NBA team, which prevented him from getting the Supermax deal.
Yeah.
In the East, like, he's almost guaranteed an All-Star spot if he's healthy, right? Like, who's going to beat him for an All-Star spot in the East?
Oh, absolutely. And probably, I mean, he could be a starter.
Right, exactly. So, like, when you're talking about building your legacy, like, yeah, staying with Utah, they have a really fun, young, promising team. Like, Rudy Gobert is great. Ricky Rubio is great. Rodney Hood could be really good. Same with, you know, your boy Donovan Mitchell, Dante Exum, Alec Burks, if he stays healthy, even Derek Favors. So they have a lot of, like, good young talent, but they're also at a conference with, like, now 10 or 11 other teams that could feasibly make the playoffs. Whereas in the East, we are, like, racking our brains trying to figure out, like, who's going to be the sixth seed? There isn't, you know, like, there are five good teams in the East right now. So for that reason, of course, you know, it makes total sense for him to have left. I want to go back to the restricted free agency thing, and not, I don't want to, like, blame the Jazz for letting him do that, because, you know, it sometimes makes sense to let a guy find an offer sheet and say, yeah, we'll match it. Like, it's a risk either way, right? Like, because you could sign a guy to a big offer sheet or to a big extension, and he might not have been able to find that offer sheet next summer. We saw that with Andre Roberson in OKC this year. He just got a 3-year, $30 million deal. He reportedly turned down, like, I think 4 years, $48 million or something like that last September, October, whatever. Probably, you know, if the Thunder hadn't signed Victor Oladipo to a 4-year, whatever, $80 million extension he had, there's no way he's getting that money this summer, right? Like, if KCP is still on the market, there's no way Victor Oladipo is getting $20 million. No. So, like, I don't, you know, it is sometimes smart for teams to let their players test restricted free agency because, yeah, let them set the market and then you have freedom to match. But teams, you know, construct offer sheets, and we see that with Sean Marks, especially in the Brooklyn Nets. They construct offer sheets that are especially difficult to match. They could put in a fourth-year player option. They can put in a trade kicker. Prior to this year, they had the poison pill thing where it could jump, you know, for second-round picks and undrafted free agents. It can jump a huge amount from the first 2 years to the second 2 years. So it's just like there are risks either way with that approach. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that colors what happens. You know, Utah has this coming up again with Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood is now eligible for an extension. Dennis Lindsay has said, like, look, with Hayward gone, you know, he has a chance to break out as our primary scorer. So I'm really interested to see what happens with Rodney Hood's extension negotiations this fall. Like, does Utah try to get him locked up now? You know, seeing what just happened with Hayward, like going back a couple years and thinking, like, damn, if we had locked him up, you know, he's still a member of the Jazz in this coming season.
Right. They should, because, you know, you make a valid point about some players should go into restricted free agency because, you know, it makes sense for them to set the for teams to let other teams set the market. But there are players that you just don't take that course with. Gordon Hayward was one of those guys. You should have just locked him up. He just came off a 16.5 rebound, 5 assist season. He was, what, 23 at the time? Mm-hmm. And he had proved in seasons prior that he could hit the three ball at a 40% clip. He had proved by then that he could get to the line a lot more, that he could carry a heavier offensive load. Like, there was no way they should have let him enter restricted free agency. And that goes for a lot of players. Like, if you're, I don't know, Nikola Mirotic, who's in a restricted free agent right now, like, that's a guy you let, you know, go out and get an offer, because if that offer is too rich for you, you just, you know, okay, fair enough. We can lose a Nikola Mirotic, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But a Gordon Hayward, no, just get the extension done. That's also why I've kind of flip-flopped a little bit on the whole Joel Embiid extension thing. Just lock him up. Just lock him up. It's still a risk because of the injury concern, but lock his ass up.
Yeah, we'll talk about Embiid a lot this summer, I'm sure, but I'm in that same boat, because, well, I mean, it's just, especially, I mean, going to the Jazz for a second, I mean, I think market size plays a big part in this too, right? Like, the Jazz are not typically a big free agent destination, so if you have a guy like Hayward, who has the potential to develop into an all-star, that should also influence your thinking a little bit, whereas, you know, the Lakers, Julius Randle is eligible for an extension. I don't think Julius Randle's getting an extension this fall. Just, you know, especially because the Lakers are trying to preserve all their cap space for next summer and make their big free agent splash. Like, if you think you can get a big free agent, yeah, sure, whatever. Let them test the market. But for a team like Utah that traditionally does not get big free agents, like, you got to take care of your own. And so Embiid has his own very complicated circumstances because of the injury history. The Sixers can only offer all teams can only have two guys coming off of rookie scale contracts signed to 5-year extensions at one time. So because the Sixers have, you know, they have Embiid, but they also have Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz. One of those three guys, if all three of them stay with the Sixers for the next 5, 6, 7 years, only two of them can get the 5-year max. So, like, do you give it to Embiid now, given the injury history?
No.
And then guarantee that Simmons or Fultz will not get one? Do you wait until next summer? Like, there, you know, and then if it's the 5 year, it has to be for the max.
It has to be
right, at least, right? So it has to be at least 25%. You know, you could hope maybe Embiid loves Philly so much. He just wants the contract security now. He signs a 4 year extension that's below the max, like Steph Curry did, you know, back in the day, and he becomes one of the biggest bargains in the NBA. Maybe that happens, but then you're sacrificing your team control over him. So
yeah,
a lot of complicating factors with Embiid, which we will talk about, you know, once free agency dies down a bit. I do want to focus on the Boston side of things for a second here, because look, we know Gordon Hayward's going to be a good fit with Boston, right? We obviously a good signing, even if they have to give away one of Bradley, Crowder, Smart, worth the price.
Yeah.
That said, how do you see them compared to Cleveland in the East and then Golden State? Does this push them over Cleveland? Are they now a real threat to Golden State, or do you still see them as a slight step behind both?
They're a threat to Cleveland. That's how I'd put it. Like, I could see them having a hard, tough-out series with the Cavs and maybe winning. I'm not sure, like, either way, if they can go toe-to-toe with Cleveland as of right now, but if they get their reps in, and all depending on what's going to happen with the Cavs, like team chemistry wise, that might just go down the crapper this season. And if that's the case, then Boston would be my favorite to go on. But I think they're a lot closer to Cleveland than they are Golden State. As currently constructed, Boston is not going to beat Golden State. They might get a game in or two if they go that far. And if Golden State has like one major injury, knock on wood that that doesn't happen, then sure, they might make a series out of it. But good Lord, that's still, that hill is just so goddamn big.
Right. Yeah, especially, I mean, the defensive concerns with Isaiah Thomas are still there, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially against Steph Curry. Like, Steph Curry's got 6 inches on him.
A rebounding problem still. Like, Gordon Hayward doesn't fix the rebounding problem.
Right, yeah, which is the one place, theoretically, that is like the one area of weakness for the Warriors. So I'm with you in thinking, you know, yeah, they're not going to beat the Warriors this year in all likelihood. You know, crazy things happen. Kevin Durant could break his leg. You know, they thought he did last year. So if that happens, it's anyone's ball game. But yeah, as you said, the Cavs, I mean, that's why kudos to the Celtics, and we'll talk about the Raptors shortly as well. But, like, I respect these teams for going all in the East, because the Cavs right now, we really don't know what they're going to look like in a year. So, like, the Eastern Conference, you know, LeBron is riding, what, 7 straight trips to the finals. It seems like he is the unstoppable obstacle. LeBron might not be in the Eastern Conference after this year. So, for that reason, kudos to Boston. Kudos to Toronto. Like, you guys are doing the right thing, because you have a team that is already assembled to compete with them, and you might be the favorite in the East come next summer, depending on what happens with LeBron. So let's move to Paul Millsap. And we're going to, this has just been a theme, I would say, throughout free agency, right? So like going into free agency, we all expected the numbers that were thrown around last year. So a guy like Evan Turner or Kent Bazemore getting 4 years, $70 million. Joakim Noah getting 4 years, $72 million. The market has not reflected that this summer. So we expected Kyle Lowry, you know, when we were worried about Lowry with the Raptors, it was because, like, do you want Kyle Lowry at 5 years, $200 million? Do you want Paul Millsap at 4 years, $150 million? Paul Millsap with the Nuggets, 3 years, $90 million, third year team option. Now, Mort, you've been praying that Millsap landed on the Nuggets for a while now. How do you feel about that value for him?
I actually prayed for him to land in Minnesota, but with the, you know, the caveat that if he were to land in Denver, it would just make so much sense because he's that veteran presence. I love the deal. I love the fact that teams are handing out the 3-year deal as opposed to the 4-year deal for these older guys, because Millsap is 32. There would be no sense in signing him for like a full guaranteed 4 years. And this is essentially a 2+1. So,
yeah.
I mean, that makes it even better. If he starts to drop off significantly after age 34, Denver can just cut their loss. That's, it's just, it's smart GMing. And yeah. for in terms of the fit, I mean, good Lord, Nikola Jokic and Paul Millsap playmaking from out of the post or even the high top. Just they need to get some cutters and some shooters, and then they could be rolling offensively. They already are. Like, they had one of the most potent offenses last year, so they only added to it right now. They lost Gallinari, but hell, I'll take that.
Yeah, if you're gonna swap out Gallinari for Millsap, that's a trade.
That's a no-brainer right there. I mean, right. I like Gallo, but he's frequently injured. Mm-hmm. He's not much of a defender. He's not much of a rebounder or a playmaker. He's like a shooter and a scorer. He had that one ability that the Nuggets are going to miss now, that he could get to the line a ton.
Yep.
Paul can do that as well, but I'm not sure that his age is more inclined to make him like this interior presence that's just going to draw a shit ton of fouls. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that he's going to step outside a little bit more, also to make room for Jokic. So they need to find someone who can draw that foul, and that might be Jamal Murray if he gets some driving lanes, or Gary. No, you know what? Gary Harris probably a better bet because he's built like a tank.
right. Yeah, exactly. And they have, as you mentioned, they have the shooters. Yeah, they're going to miss Gallo, but Millsap has 3-point range. I mean, yeah. He's not a Gallinari level shooter, but he can stretch the four. Yeah, he's passable. And but they have, Jokic can shoot. They have Harris. They have Jamal Murray. They still have Wilson Chandler. They have Will Barton. They've got some interesting options. I like them, though, because, like, we've been talking a lot about positionless NBA and, like, do you need a ball-dominant point guard in this era? Like, Denver might go completely point guardless, right? Like, Jamal Murray will be the de facto point guard, quote-unquote. Yeah. Yeah. But, like, at any one point, it could be Jokic, Millsap, Harris, or Murray leading the offense, which is going to make them a nightmare to guard.
Well, if you go back all the way back to Phil Jackson's Bulls and Phil Jackson's Lakers, mm-hmm. there wasn't that traditional point guard. Those were theoretical shooting guards in the point guard position, because Derek Fisher was not a traditional point guard by any means imaginable. He was a spot-up shooter. He did not handle the ball a whole lot. Kobe did. Mm-hmm. Ron Harper, not the best spot-up shooter, but he was more like just a security blanket. If everything fell apart, you could give him the ball that he could handle a little bit. So we've seen this before. Now we're just seeing it switch because the big men of the game have gotten guard skills. Yeah. And that's wonderful, especially for Jokic. Like, Jokic is going to be a point center. And if we look at the Clippers, who got Gallinari, they're probably going to go point blank all throughout the season. So we are definitely seeing an NBA that has taken this positionless basketball to its core, really. And it's really, really interesting and very exciting. It's also kind of ironic that this movement lands in the middle of the golden age of point guards, though.
I know. Yeah. But, I mean, look at Lonzo Ball, is a traditional point guard. I'd say a lot of the other guys that came out this year, especially in the draft, like, they don't necessarily fit the archetype of a Chris Paul. They're more in the mold of, like, Dennis Smith Jr. got a lot of comps to Russell Westbrook, which... I don't know if he's as athletic, because I don't know if anyone's as athletic as Russell Westbrook, but he's that type of player. Markelle Fultz, the Sixers are going to use as a combo guard. His first summer league game, they basically played him at the two. So, yeah, it is funny that we do still have all of these elite point guards, but, like, I think we've said it time and again before, the Warriors have proven having more shooters, more ball handlers, more passers on the floor just makes you that much harder to guard. And to your point about Denver, once, Jokic got off to a slow start last year because they were trying to force him and Nurkic to play together and just didn't work out. But then once he moved back into the starting lineup and Nurkic got benched, I think it was December 15th, I'm pretty sure the Nuggets had the best offense in the NBA from that point forward. So, like, adding Paul Millsap to that core, that leads into my next question. Again, we've seen the West at pretty much every team has gotten better, with the exception of maybe the the Suns, who really haven't done that much, but even they got Josh Jackson, so they've gotten better. Every team has gotten at least somewhat better. So where do you see Denver falling in the playoff hierarchy now?
Oh, are we already at that point where we have to discuss playoffs? Good Lord, Brian.
Yes.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot there. I don't... Yeah, Millsap is just such a huge weapon for him, especially in terms of his leadership, his experience, his defense. 8 seed? Something around that? Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the thing. I can't look at the Western Conference and say, oh, Denver is like a top 5 team. I can't. But I also can't be absolutely certain that they're, you know, not a playoff team. It's really up in the air. There are so mm-hmm. many dangerous teams right now. You have Minnesota, who last year was on the outside looking in. I have them as like a lock to go to the second round now, even with their lack of shooting, because that the talent is so insane, really. You have Dallas, who got surprisingly better. They could fight at least a little bit. Memphis is probably going to go a little bit down. Because they lost Zach Randolph, and you know Marc Gasol is getting older. Mike Conley is getting older. We're not, you know, Vince Carter might leave as well. We're not really sure. What he took a meeting with the Kings, I know.
Yep, Tony Allen might leave. Jamichael Green, it sounds like, is going to leave.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Grizzlies are definitely getting worse.
Yeah, they're getting worse. It feels sort of safe to say the 7th or 8th spot, right, for Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I mean, that's kind of when we can segue into the Clippers here with Gallinari, who they've acquired in a sign-and-trade, 3 years, $65 million. I think it's all fully guaranteed. So, yeah, like, Golden State's clearly the top team in the West. Mm. San Antonio and Houston, barring catastrophic injuries to James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, they should be safe. After that, it's like Minnesota, OKC, Denver, Portland. I feel pretty good about all of them, but that's already 7 teams. Now we've got Utah, we have the Clippers, we have Memphis, we have Dallas, we have New Orleans.
We have Sacramento.
Right, we have the Kings. So, like, I mean, there are feasibly, you know, I probably put the Kings outside looking in on the playoff picture.
Yeah, but still, like, they're not going to be as bad as they were.
Right, yeah, they're at least, like, somewhat competitive now. But what, that's 12 teams that have legitimate playoff aspirations. Yep. Yep. So that was kind of my point with the whole Denver thing. Like, yeah, you know, you added Paul Millsap, but like, you're still not guaranteed a playoff spot, which is insane. It just like speaks to how good the West has become. So let's talk about the Clippers now. Another team where, you know, they lost Chris Paul. They got a bunch of valuable pieces, assets in return, including Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, a top 3 protected pick from Houston that they sent, I believe, in the sign and trade for Gallinari to Atlanta. So now, you know, you got to figure, which they also sent Jamal Crawford, which is a bummer because I really wanted to see Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams on the same team.
Like, oh, yeah.
if we're worried about the too many or not enough balls problem in Houston for Chris Paul and James Harden, imagine a Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams backcourt. It would have been spectacular. But yeah, we're now looking at probably a Clippers team that's starting, I mean, let's go from the back. Definitely DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, Danilo Gallinari, 3, 4, 5, Patrick Beverley at the 1, probably Austin Rivers at the 2.
Yeah, definitely Austin Rivers.
You've got Lou Williams, Decker, Harrell off the bench. Is that a playoff team?
No, because I don't think that neither Blake nor Gallinari is going to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time they played a full season?
Yeah.
So, and again, they need a shot creator. Like, Griffin is a playmaker for others. He's not a guy who is consistently going to create his own offense.
Mm-hmm.
Gallo, he can on occasion, but he's not like a full-time creator. Then you have Austin Rivers, which I don't want him to create a lot of offense for himself. Right, really. Right. So you really, it's... It becomes a game of the sum has to be larger than individual parts, right? Mm-hmm. And I question whether it is. Like, I love Patrick Beverley, and he has to run the show. He has to be the de facto defender, you know, guarding the best perimeter player and whatnot. But, and I think he's going to do well in that role. But with the players around him, I'm just not sure that it's enough. Like, you are going to see a more potent offense when everyone is healthy. And that's good. It's probably going to be a little bit more unexpected offense than it was with Chris and JJ and Blake and DeAndre, because that was just scripted all the way to the point where you could sort of see what they were going for. Okay, high pick and roll, JJ coming off, like some floppy action, hit him there and he turns around and shoots. Like, it was the same thing over and over again for 4 years. So now you're going to get a lot of different looks, which is exciting, but I don't think it's going to work out, at least initially. If they work out their kinks, then maybe next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, I mean, if they stay healthy, they at least have a chance.
Sure. Like, if Blake and Danilo Gallinari surprises and plays 70-plus games both, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. But I share your concerns. I feel like they're kind of building in the same model as Houston was last year, where they're like, all right, we can't slow down the Clippers, so let's just add a bunch of shooters and try to outscore them and win like 130 to 125. Because like their defense is going to be atrocious because Danilo Gallinari...
Oh, yeah, he's so bad.
Right.
Griffin isn't a whole lot better. DeAndre is very overrated. By the way... You know, the Clippers kind of screwed me a little bit because I was absolutely certain they were going to nay-nay Blake Griffin.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
The Gallo trade just, whoop, that took that away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they could try to flip him later, I guess, but Doc Rivers, as long as Doc Rivers is in charge, they're not going to try to rebuild and they're just going to trade away draft picks and be hard cap forever. Let's move over to the Eastern Conference for a little bit. We've got Kyle Lowry. Oh, you mean the D-League? G-League. Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka both coming back to the Raptors. Lowry, 3 years, $100 million. Ibaka, 3 years, $65 million. What did you think about those two deals?
Love the 3 years again. I've said it before. I'm saying it again. Even with Ibaka, because, look, I love Serge Ibaka, but his game has... slightly declined, I want to say. I'm not sure if that is controversial, but it does seem like he isn't as explosive as he used to be. So I think that could have factored in a little bit. 3 years for him, 3 years for Kyle. It keeps the core together for a three-year window to just take all-out advantage and honestly hope for injuries for their perspective for Boston, Cleveland, and Golden State. But it's not going to make any sort of difference. They're probably going to be a second round team. Maybe they get lucky 1 year and make the conference finals again, and then that's about it. But I like the fight. I like the strategy. And also, these contracts are now tradable.
Yeah.
It's not like they are going to get locked in for years and years and years and years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like right now, I believe with those two contracts alone, they're in the luxury tax. So it sounds like they're trying to shed contracts. Damari Carroll, I've heard, floated. The interesting one's Jonas Valanciunas, who we have long advocated to play more. But
hey, then by all means, trade him so he gets a fucking chance somewhere.
Right. Well, so here's the thing, though. Do you think Ibaka is better suited? You know, you mentioned that he's kind of, if he hasn't declined, he's at least stagnated.
Yeah.
So do you think he's better suited now to play the five rather than the four? And if so, is that incentive to then go ahead and trade JV?
That's a good word. Stagnated. That's a good word. That's better than declined. I agree. I would use him as a five man, probably. He's more of a rim protector, and he can still stretch. And if you have like a five man who can go out and shoot threes, and you actually get a power forward in there who can also stretch the court. I mean, hell, it could actually be Damari Carroll.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. Theoretically speaking. Mm-hmm. Then you get all-out spacing that DeMar DeRozan could take advantage of.
Yep.
I wouldn't be opposed to that at all. No. Whether it justifies them moving Jonas Valanciunas, I guess on some level, I don't think it's justifiable to screw him around for that many years and then trade him off afterwards. I think it'd be stupid, but... if that's their logic, then go ahead and do it as long as Jonas actually gets a shot somewhere. But no, theoretically speaking, it would give them more flexibility from an outside perspective, I guess. And if Ibaka regains some sort of shot-blocking presence, he's really dropped down in that area. Like, he's just under 1.5, I think, last year, where he used to be 3, 3.5. Yeah. I mean, if he can regain just some of that, that would be huge for the center position for Toronto, and would also give them a much needed shot blocking presence. Like, that's the one thing I always felt they really needed when you looked at them. You never feared going up against it because you knew you could take it to the rack. You mm-hmm. always knew that you could go against Jonas, you could go against Patrick Patterson, you could go against these guys because there just wasn't that defensive interior presence. Like, if you move Ibaka there and tell him, you know what, just focus on three things, honestly. Block shots, rebound the basketball, and hit open threes in transition.
Yep.
Why not? I mean, that'd be fine.
Right. I mean, I feel like the worst thing, like, I don't blame the Raptors for running it back because, as I mentioned earlier, we just don't know what's going to happen with Cleveland next year. And, you and I picked Toronto when we were doing our playoff hot takes. We picked them to the finals. But that, that was with...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That was with PJ Tucker and Patrick Patterson, who they have both lost this summer. So those are big losses, but... I mean, I think, now that you effectively have the same core aside from those two, if you can't find a taker for Jonas Valanciunas, and going through the league, there isn't a huge demand for ground-bound centers. Like, you might have to attach an asset just to get rid of him, which seems harsh but true. I feel like
Sean Marks, though.
Yeah, Sean, that's true. Yeah, and the Knicks are still the Knicks. Who knows what they're going to do. But the thing, I feel like if you have Ibaka at the five, Carroll at the four, Norman Powell moves into the starting lineup to give you more shooting.
Oh, I like that one. Yeah.
That, you got to try something new. Because what worked?
Defense.
So what you did last year clearly didn't work. You have OG now coming off the bench to maybe fill that same role that Norman Powell did. I don't think they beat the Warriors. I don't know if they beat the Cavs or this new look Boston team, but
no, chicks things up.
Yeah, I think it's at least puts them in the conversation. They'll still, they basically, if they stay healthy, they're almost guaranteed a top four seed along with Boston, Cleveland, and then one of Washington or Milwaukee. So this whole regular season for them should just be about experimentation and trying to figure out a way to create some sort of a rotation that is capable of beating the best teams in the East and the Warriors, God forbid, if they get that far. But so, I feel like they got to shake something up big time.
They were supposedly shopping Corey Joseph.
Oh, right. To the Pacers before.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not really crazy about that. I hope that they stop shopping him. Here's actually an interesting thought. He played well when he was starting. Mm-hmm. To the point where I almost felt that you couldn't really take him out of the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. So maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you actually start him as your traditional point guard. You slide Lowry over to the two, at least offensively. Like, play him off the ball because he's such an explosive shooter anyway. Like, he can be run off screens and take spots up. Mm-hmm. And then defensively, you have Corey Joseph guarding the two because he's like a sturdy 6'3". Mm-hmm. With very, very nice defensive mechanics. Like, when he goes down, his head is back, his body moves really, really strictly. Like, you can see the Popovich pedigree just being worked into him. So I would feel very confident in Joseph as a defender in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. Even guarding twos, who might be a little bit bigger, might be a little bit stronger, wouldn't mind. Yeah. I wouldn't mind that at all. And if Joseph could get that reliable corner three in there somewhere, sure. But I'm also digging the Norman Powell thing. I think Norman should get a bigger role. He was fantastic.
I feel like Norman, no matter whether he starts or comes off the bench, is definitely heading toward 30 minutes a night. The Corey Joseph thing's interesting. I feel like the big concern there would be, who's your backup point guard?
DeLon Wright might be time. His first year.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. It's certainly worth tinkering with. Again, I just feel like that's what Toronto should do. Like, who gives a shit about wins and losses this year? Again, you're going to be a top four seed. You're probably not going to get home court advantage, above Cleveland or Boston. So play around, figure something out. Cause you can't afford paying the luxury tax to get swept in the second round again. So,
to your point about trying something new, mm-hmm. I was thinking about this West-East thing because last time we recorded a podcast, I mentioned that the East-West problem is only going to get worse because you have seven teams in the West and seven teams in the East who are, you know, going to be in the lottery regardless.
Right. Right.
So that means if the West is going to win the lottery, they're only going to get bigger and better or and tougher and whatnot. So I was looking over, you know, the Eastern Conference tendencies in recent years, and it struck me that East teams are extremely traditional and they keep the same lineups over and over and over again. They are very much less experimental than Western Conference teams. Like they are, East teams are just less inclined to slide people out of position and try something new. That might be a theme going into this season that we should look at because, you know, the Raptors have churned out the same lineup. Atlanta for many years, the same thing.
Right.
It's just these middle-of-the-road teams, they do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, which is, you know, by definition, insanity.
Right, yeah. I feel like Miami was the nice exception to that rule, even back in the LeBron era, but even last year, too. You know, James Johnson was kind of the multi-position do-it-all guy, who hopefully they'll bring him back. But, yeah, I mean, Boston this year, I think, will have that same kind of a look because that's what they've been talking about. Brad Stevens today, there was an article that came out where he's like, I don't think of the traditional five positions anymore. I think you're a ball handler, you're a wing, or you're a big. That's it.
Yeah.
And, like, all of those guys, Marcus Smart could play 1-3. Jay Crowder could play 2-4. Jaylen Brown could play, you know, 3-4. Jason Tatum could play 3-4. Gordon Hayward could play 2-4. So they'll have some interesting stuff. But, yeah, that's a good point. I do feel like, you know, the Warriors ushered in this real, like, positional revolution. Or I guess the Heat did before them, but the Warriors have expedited it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, all East teams should be... You know, again, it's going to be so easy to pick up wins against a lot of these bad teams. You might as well play around and try to figure out some look that's going to give the top teams trouble. Let's stay in the East. Let's go to the Sixers because they... Here's the depressing thing about this. They signed J.J. Redick to 1 year, $23 million deal. That's their biggest free agent signing since Elton Brand back in 2008. I went back in Pro Sports Transactions and went through every free agent signing they've had in the past decade. And that was easily the biggest one. So, like, they've handed their own restricted guys big deals. They got Andre Iguodala to a six-year, $80 million deal. They did Thad Young to, like, 5 years, $43 million or something. But outside free agents, that's their biggest splash in the decade. They also got Amir Johnson, 1 year, $11 million. So, I'm going to give my perspective on this coming from the Sixers side, Mort, and then I want you to tell me if I'm way off base here, because I've seen some crazy criticism of especially the Johnson contract, but also Redick on Twitter, and I don't quite understand it, but I might just be too in the weeds from a Sixers side of things. So the Sixers entered the offseason with about $50 million in cap space. They had a bunch of guys on rookie deals. Brian Colangelo said he wants to only sign guys to one-year deals. He wants to preserve future cap space. It's looking like half the teams in the NBA are going to be in the luxury tax next year. So the free agent market next year may even be more of a buyer's market than this year. So if you're signing a guy to a one-year deal, you're probably going to have to overpay him relative in terms of average annual value to a longer-term deal. It just, you know, it's going to be hard to convince a guy to take a one-year $20 million deal if he has a three-year $60 million deal on the table.
Right.
Like, you're going to have to give him more money for that 1 year. Redick, conceptually, is a perfect fit for what they needed. They needed a shooter to put alongside Fultz, or put between Fultz and Robert Covington, and they needed a veteran leader. Redick has been in the NBA for 11 seasons, hasn't missed the playoffs yet. Amir Johnson, same deal. He's not going to be as useful on the court because they just have so many young bigs that they need to get minutes for. But again, 1 year, $11 million, you probably have to overpay him a little bit. He's been in the playoffs four straight years. He's only 30 years old. He's just a tough, gritty, rugged defender. Going to be very valuable as a mentor for Joel Embiid, Rashawn Holmes. Maybe he even teaches Jahlil Okafor to play defense. They still have about $15 million left in cap space. They're basically out of roster spots. Furkan Korkmaz came over one of their first round picks from last year. So at this point, they're saving about, you know, whatever, they have $15 million left. They're saving that money, presumably, to extend and renegotiate Robert Covington's contract, which they can't do until November. Yeah. So I've seen a lot of people saying, like, you know, You know, you just overpaid Reddick, and like it's such a bad deal. Am I like why am I missing that this is a bad deal? Am I missing something, or was this just a logical thing for the Sixers to do?
I think people are missing something. It's a 1 year deal. Like, okay, so people need to understand this. This isn't about the amount, it's about the years. The amount doesn't matter in a, on a 1 year deal. It literally does not matter if he got paid 30 million. Does not matter at all. It's the flexibility that you gain of not tying up money in the future. So this one season deal, if people are calling that overpaid, okay, well, what's the alternative? What, who do you want the Sixers to go out and spend like a 4 year deal on? Like, who was that guy? Gordon Hayward wasn't walking through a door, and even if he was, like, why would you sign him when you had Ben Simmons and Robert Covington and, you know, a whole bunch of forwards there, Dario Saric as well? Like, that wouldn't even make sense. So, I mean, I will say this. I thought the Amir Johnson deal was a little bit weird, mostly because his ankles are shot. So that's I don't think he's going to play a lot. And that just seemed a little bit weird to me. But I mean, look, from everything I've heard, Amir is a wonderful locker room guy and a great leader. And you can't really put a price tag on that. So 11 million for a guy who is primarily going to be a voice, while that sounds, you know, like a lot, it's a 1 year deal. It doesn't matter. Like, pay the man, just show him your appreciation for being a mentor. That's fine. I have zero problems with what Philly has done this year. Like, if they had signed Redick for like 3 years, 65 million, then, you know, I probably would have taken it because I think Redick's game is going to age well, but it would still have been a little tougher to swallow. But had it been 2 years, 46, no problem whatsoever either. Like, that's not a long-term deal, and you can move it next year if push came to shove anyway. So, no, I don't think you're missing anything.
I was just making sure I wasn't totally off base here because I mean, yeah, the Amir Johnson deal, whatever. It's, you know, it's a lot of money for a guy who's not going to play that much. But as you said, great locker room presence. Hopefully a good guy, you know, just to teach the kid something in practice. Like, that's where he's going to
Defense
make,
especially.
yeah, that's where he's going to make his money. He's not, sure, he's not going to play much, but like, he's going to impart valuable lessons to a core of guys. None of whom who have reached the playoffs or even sniffed the playoffs. They haven't cracked 30 wins. So like having those two guys around to teach him about like rest habits, teach him about the importance of having a good diet. Like there are all things that these guys, you know, this is going to be Markelle Fultz's first year in the NBA. This is Ben Simmons's first season because he missed his entire rookie season. These guys have not gone through the grind of a full 82 game season. Joel Embiid, 3 years into his career, has not gone through the grind of staying healthy through a full 82-game season. So
Gotta lay off
having
the Shirley Temples, Joe.
he could do whatever he wants. He's the prince. But you know, it's just that's the price. If you don't have the roster spots to sign that many more guys, like it could come back to bite them. You know, right now with an Avery Bradley available, Avery Bradley would have been a great conceptual fit on this team. So, you know,
You can
if
afford him next year.
right, exactly. So, and like you're gonna Boston's not just giving away those guys. You're gonna have to give up something in exchange. Like I would not give up Rashawn Holmes and like removing the top one protection on that Lakers pick for Avery
Oh
Bradley.
God, you have Rashawn Holmes as well. Jesus,
Yeah.
the depth is so real.
Yeah. And Jonah
it's
Bolden's showing flashes in
yeah
summer league.
Bolden, yeah, who's like a shot blocker slash 3-point shooter for the center position. That's just,
Yeah, who's already better than Jahlil Okafor?
Look, seriously, you guys have as much a problem in terms of a logjam up front as Boston does with its small forwards right now.
Yeah, I know. Well, luckily all those guys are locked up. You know, Saric has 3 more years on his deal. Simmons has 3 more years on his deal. I think Rashawn has 2 more years, so it's not as much of a pressing problem as it is for
No,
Boston,
but
but yeah, it will be. It's going to be at some point, and
if
it's.
Boston needs a rebounder, like if you could package Rashawn Holmes and some stuff for Avery Bradley,
Yeah. I mean, you know,
why
but
not?
that, again, you said it. Like, they could afford him next summer and they don't have to give up anything. So, like,
That's
when
true,
Redick's
yeah.
deal expires, go after Avery Bradley, which I think it would not surprise me if they do that. You know, he's just such a perfect conceptual fit next to Fultz, especially.
Yeah, and he is the rich man's version of Redick anyway, because he plays defense.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's a little bit shorter, but right, he's not a complete tire fire on defense. So, yeah. Yeah, that's those are your Sixers hot takes for the week. Everyone making fun of, like, yeah, sure, it's weird that Redick is making $23 million and now Kevin Durant is going to make $25 million, but, like, you cannot compare the two contracts in a vacuum.
Oh, God, have you? Yeah, all right, so...
Like, I'm not going to name names. Yeah, I'm not going to name names, but someone on Twitter the other day made that comparison, and it was like, you could not lack more nuance if you tried. But like, the two teams...
That's not even apples and oranges. That's like apples and a microphone. Doesn't even make sense.
Right. Exactly. The two teams could not be, like, further removed from, you know...
And the situations as well, because Durant took a pay cut as well. He like, what was it, $7 million off or $9 million? I'm not even sure.
Well, yeah, if he wanted the full max, it was $9
million. Yeah, $9 million, right?
Right.
And he signed a 1+1, so, you know, that money is going to... He's going to get his money.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And again, 1-year deal. Yeah. I mean, really, why are you having this debate right now? It's a 1-year deal.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Let's move on. Right. You started it. Let's move on.
All right. Cool. All right. Let's go to the Kings. George Hill, 3 years, $57 million. I think the third year is either partially guaranteed or fully partially guaranteed, right?
Yes.
Zach Randolph, 2 years, $24 million. Another... pair of signings that seem to be controversial on Twitter, and I'm not quite sure why.
No, that was excellent value.
Right?
And yeah, it was. And look, in a previous podcast, I think we were recording with Kelly Scaletta at the time, I said that I wanted to see De'Aaron Fox just start right out of the gate and just, you know, give him 35 minutes and just, you know, balls to the wall.
Yep.
And that's fine. I'm still behind that logic, but if you get a good deal, you get a good deal.
Yep.
George Hill on that contract is a wonderful deal. Like that is excellent value. So what you get is a guy who is immediately going to step in and be a difference maker. He's also going to parlay wisdom upon De'Aaron Fox as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the beautiful part about it is George Hill can play the two.
Yep.
So you can actually slide him around if need be. If Buddy Hield starts off cold, Stephen Curry 2.0 starts off cold, then you just slide George Hill in at the two. It's the flexibility is amazing. Mm-hmm. The value is even more amazing. There's nothing to dislike with the George Hill signing at all. Zach Randolph, I'm kind of indifferent to that deal. It's like, it's fine. It's okay. I have no qualms with it at all. Like he's a smart grit and grind player. He plays primarily on the inside, so maybe he can teach rebounding techniques or something like that. I mean, it doesn't really move the needle anywhere, but it's fine, I guess. But the big get here is George Hill, I get why it seemed weird. I know that a lot of people on Twitter, like you, I saw that a lot of people were like, "Oh, they should just take on bad deals and whatnot." And then our buddy Mark Deeks made an excellent point, which was, you can't really have a whole bunch of kids just running around. They have plenty of youth.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have guys alongside that. And also, like, his entire point was, a good deal is always a good deal, regardless if you're in a rebuild position or if you're contending. Like, it doesn't matter where you are. A good deal is always a good deal, and you should take advantage of it.
Right.
I agree with that logic. So,
yeah,
I mean, good on Sacramento. What the hell has happened there? I'm not sure how popular these comics are in America, but here in Europe, they're pretty big. Asterix and Obelix. It's like Greek. All right. But basically, it's a comic about some back in old Italy and Greece and whatnot. And there's this thing, they can drink this potion that makes them incredibly strong and incredibly wise and whatnot. It seems like Vladi Divas just dug into that, just made a pot up, and it just drank the whole thing because something just changed.
Yeah.
Immediately. Just I'm not sure what happened, but I'm very impressed.
I am too. I mean, again, I saw it on Twitter. I get the argument against it, right? You want to give playing time to your young guys.
Right.
This is the year, like, why are you trying to win right now? You have no chance of making the playoffs. Deeks, I think, was the one who made this point too. Like, the Hill and Zebo signings don't preclude them from still being very bad. Like, they're still going to rely on a lot of young kids.
That's right.
And they're going against, again, a West that has 12 other teams that are playoff caliber. Mm-hmm. Like, they still might be in the top five or six. And then they don't have their pick in 2019. So, like, they have less incentive to tank than, you know, a team that's got plenty of their own picks in the future. But they still might suck. First of all.
Right.
Second, as you mentioned, you know, it's great veteran leadership. Yeah, they have De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield as their front court or their back court of the future. But as you said, George Hill can play either position, going to be a great veteran leader for them both. And that, I mean, that's the same value. George Hill, 3 years, $57 million with only a partial guarantee. That's the same value that Jeff Teague got in Minnesota.
Right.
I'd much rather have George Hill than Jeff Teague at the same price point.
I'm pretty sure the Tips is secretly going right now.
I wonder if Hill had a higher asking price because there were reports last offseason or last, like toward the beginning of last season, they turned down, I think it was a 4-year, $80 million extension with Utah. Yeah. So I'm wondering if he had inflated expectations based on last year. Yeah. And then once he realized the market was a little cold, mm-hmm. he went. But yeah, I mean, I just, that deal is going to be so easily flippable down the line if need be. Like, you could easily flip that contract. If a contender loses their point guard, there you go, right? Like, people are saying, well, you shouldn't sign players so you can take bad contracts and get assets. I mean, a lot of teams now have the flexibility to do that. Like, there are about 15 teams that are going to be in cap hell. And then, like, Atlanta has 30-some million, I think. Chicago has a lot of money. Indiana has a lot of money. Brooklyn, assuming this Otto Porter offer sheet gets max, they have a lot of money. Like, Sacramento would be competing with a bunch of other teams to take the bad contracts and pick up whatever assets you can. So it's not like they were the only team that would have had cap space, you know? So yeah, hell yeah. The Zebo signing, I'm with you. It's
fine.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. It's 2 years. I mean, they have a bunch. Again, it's like Philly. They have a bunch of young bigs. You know, they have Scal and Willie Cauley-Stein and now Harry Giles and Papagiannis. Like, they have a bunch of young guys. Zebo will be a great influence on them.
Oh, he'll kick their ass. That's the
right,
thing.
Exactly.
Like, he'll kick their ass in practice. Like, he'll get them game ready. I'm sure of it. And to go back to, like, the backcourt for a second, just to wrap that up, even if we take, like, a basketball approach to it, if you have a three guard rotation primarily, mm-hmm. for the two guard spots, that's 32 minutes a night for each.
Right.
Plenty of time. You're not, you know, De'Aaron Fox might not even crack 28. Like, I want him to play 35, but, you know, the Kings might say, you know what, well, 28, 25, maybe if you go a little low. And Buddy Hield might not crack more than 30 anyway. So there are plenty of minutes to go around as well. Yeah. I mean, it's just.
You could put Buddy Hield at the three at times if we're talking about creativity here, like, right. You know, throw shit at the wall. You're Sacramento, like, you're not going to make the playoffs this year in all likelihood. See if Hield can play some small ball three, and then like you could conceivably have a lineup with Fox, Hill, and Hield all on the floor at the same time.
Yeah, I've seen no downside to this whatsoever. So
okay, weird times. Glad we reached a consensus there. All right, let's talk, before we go back to the Warriors, let's talk your boy, Taj Gibson, going to the Wolves. 2 years, $28 million. You did. You've been on this for about 3 months now.
Oh, actually, no.
Since
more
the
than
OKC
that,
trade, yeah. Yeah, so 5 months, I should say. How do you like Gibson's fit in Minnesota, and did you like that value for him?
Oh, I hate his fit in Minnesota. That's why I've been talking about it for 6 months. No, it's wonderful. I think he is just such a Tips guy. And with Jimmy coming in, this was just like the perfect roll of the dice for a power forward. Like, I'm sure they went after Millsap initially, and then Millsap crossed them off their list. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And then Taj is right there. And I know that he is declining slightly but mm-hmm. you know, he's 32, but his game is still so effective. He's a high intensity defensive forward who can rebound, who's still athletic at his age. Like, he's not a guy who's got shot ankles or shot knees and whatever. He can still get up there. He can switch onto smaller players. He can even run the court very effectively for a big, especially as a trailer. Like, I can't even count the number of times I've seen Taz grab a board, throw it out to a guard, just sprint down the court and end up with a lob. Like, that opportunity is going to be there because you're going to have Jimmy running the court. You're going to have Andrew and Carl running the court as well. Like, nobody's going to pay attention to Taj Gibson. So, you know, he's going to get a lot of easy baskets. And at the same time, he is a wonderful teacher. Like, everything mm-hmm. about him is just so unselfish. Everything you hear about Taj, he took, like, the Luol Deng approach, where it was always, like, an arm around your shoulder. It was kind words. It was in practice, you know, it was encouragement in practice. It was, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. He is going to be great for both Towns and also Gorgui Dieng, honestly, yeah. even though, yeah, Gorgui is 26, I want to say, something like that. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, Taj can still, you know, teach him a bunch of stuff as well. So this is going to be good all around. And now Tibbs has two former guys who can sort of teach everyone that this is how Tibbs operate. This, if anyone on the T-Wolves were sort of hesitant as to how Tibbs functioned last year, now you have Jimmy, now you have Taj coming in, letting these stars know, don't worry about it. Tibbs loves you. It's just,
right.
this is his way. We're going to do it this and this and this way, and you're going to see this and this return from it if you put in the work. Mm-hmm. So I think this transition is going to be very, very smooth.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that people seem to be worried about is the spacing, right? Because in theory, right. I mean, I guess Teague somewhere is either Teague or Karl Anthony Towns is your best 3-point shooter right now, which is not ideal. Yeah. So are you worried about that at all?
Yes, obviously. The thing is, though, we shouldn't forget that Karl Anthony Towns, he did knock down 100 threes last year, mm-hmm. 101 actually, and he's probably going to get a lot better as a shooter as well. So mm-hmm. if he increases that volume and percentage, and Andrew Wiggins does as well, because last year he also, you know, took a step up shooting wise. So if we expect him to do similar things this year, and if Jimmy can maintain that 37% level that he did last year, mm-hmm. then we're at least off to a good start. Having said that, it's not the end game. You need to fill out that bench with shooters.
Yeah, and you've got Bielica, who is a decent shooter, big man, obviously, but, you know,
like, he's like a decent shooter. He's not like a zone buster, right? So you need a zone buster.
Yeah. It'll be a concern, but I don't think it's going to trip Minnesota up en route to the playoffs, but we'll see. And the West is the West. So it's going to be tricky for any team not named Warriors, Spurs, or Rockets to make it in there. So let's end this week talking about the Warriors. We mentioned the Supermax for Stephen Curry last episode. The Warriors have been pretty busy since then. They got Andre Iguodala, after some heavy flirting with pretty much every team in the West, came back on a 3-year, $48 million deal. Kevin Durant surprised everyone. Because the Warriors didn't own his burn rights. If he wanted his full max, which is around, you know, close to 35, but somewhere in the 34 million range, they would have had to renounce Iggy Livingston. That was never going to happen. So they could have given him the non-Bird max. It was around 31.3 million, I think. He decided to take 25 as the first year. So it's a 2-year, 53 million-ish deal with a second-year player option, which he will clearly decline. Using the savings, you could basically say they deferred the savings of that to sign Nick Swaggy P. Young to a 1-year, $5.2 million deal. They also got Omri Caspi 1 year on the veterans minimum. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
And Jordan Bell.
Oh, yeah. Right.
$3.5 million cash in the draft.
Right. Yes. They stole Jordan Bell from the Chicago Bulls. First of all, before we even say that, can I just say teams need to stop selling picks to the fucking Warriors? Like, If the Warriors call you and ask for a pick, just hang up the goddamn phone, right?
Well, it's the Bulls. The Bulls gave up a grand total of 6 draft picks for the experiment of Doug McDermott.
That is true. So, that is true. You know. Yeah, but like, if you're all really trying to beat them, don't help them get stronger. Like, just don't let them take your picks. Just, God. Mm-hmm. Like, because Patrick McCaw last year with the Bucks, you know, the Bucks sold Patrick McCaw for even less than the Bulls sold Jordan Bell. But, like, the Warriors are going to be in luxury tax hell very soon. Don't help them get cheap players. Make them pay out the ass so they have to get rid of one of their good guys. It's crazy. All right, but let's talk about Durant first. What do you think of his decision to give up so much money?
Well, if it meant keeping Iggy around and Sean Livingston around, that's pretty selfless.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I do hate the fact that a millionaire is going to save a billionaire money.
Yeah.
That the overall line of thinking there, I always hate that. I think a guy should get paid what he's worth.
Mm-hmm.
But I get it. They want to build this dynasty, and he's looking at the big picture right now. Like, Durant, at this stage of his career, he's not looking at scoring titles. He's not looking at individual accolades. He's looking to get those 3-4 championships down. And he's doing everything in his power to make that happen, because he knows whatever money he's giving up, he's going to make in the other end, like commercials, shoe deals, whatever. He's nearing that area where he's becoming a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's trying to just pull it all forward, because his legacy is going to take care of him financially.
Right.
I mean, look, there's not going to be any monetary needs from his perspective. And getting Caspi, Nick Young, like, those are the acquisitions that just makes you a dynasty, like, in mm-hmm. the long run.
Yep.
If Nick Young could have a good season, and Caspi as well, for that matter, they could re-sign again next year for the minimum, both mm-hmm. of them. And then you just carry that on. Like, that. This is the Steve Kerr, Judd Bushler acquisitions of the old Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm absolutely loving what Durant is doing for the sake of the team, even though he should get paid more.
Right.
But no, it's... The Warriors have had an A+ offseason so far. It's ridiculous how well they've pulled through here with everything. You would honestly think it was David Griffin running their operations, because he did so much for the Cavs, like, no available things. And right. Yeah, so it's been amazing for them. I mean, I can't even wrap my head around how good a summer they had.
I know, yeah. I mean, they replaced Ian Clark, James Michael McAdoo, and Matt Barnes with Nick Young, Omri Caspi, Jordan Bell. Like, they got better on the fringes, and that's where...
Did they renounce Ian Clark?
I don't know if they have, actually. Yeah, maybe they'll even bring him back. And JaVale McGee is still floating out there. He's flirting with...
For a minimum?
Yeah. I mean, and Zaza's still out there, too.
That bench could make the playoffs.
Yeah, in the East.
Yeah, obviously.
But to the Durant point first, I mean, look, his shoe deal is big enough where money doesn't matter, right? Like, all of those top-tier superstars are making more money off the court than they are on the court.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a status symbol to make the max, but he's going to get his money once they have his full bird rights. It's just he was going to kick it down a year or two, and, like, I get the argument, like, yeah, he should have taken $31.4 million. You know, screw the Warriors owners, make them pay out the ass. But, like, you know, that's... If he wants to take less, no one should criticize him for it. That's his decision.
Oh, no. I'm not... If you thought that was... No, I'm not criticizing Durant at all.
No, I mean, not... Yeah, you weren't. But, like, I have seen some people saying, like, well, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? Why are you making the sacrifice? Like... Look back to the San Antonio Spurs the last 20 years.
People are silly. Come on, man. Look, when a guy is making a lot of money, people are complaining about that guy making a lot of money. Oh, he's overpaid and blah, blah, blah. Then when someone actually sacrifices something, people are all about, oh, why did they do... That's people. People are weird.
Right.
But that's when it comes to money, we just can't get into that same world. Because, look, I mean, You know what? I'm going to do it right. I'm going to open... Here's my wallet, Brian, okay? I'm going to open it right now. I'm not going to find something that is equivalent to about, $2.37. I can't... Right. I'm not in that mindset of giving up millions and or hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm not even there. I'm just going to say, you know what? Let them do what they do.
Yeah.
And the only point I'm going to make is that I think billionaire owners, they should never, like... ask millionaires to give something up. It just seems weird. That's the right. only thing. That's the only place where I am at.
I'm wondering, like, that is such a big pay cut that I don't feel like it came from the Warriors, right? Like, I feel like Kevin Durant.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah. He was the one who came to them and was like,
yeah.
Because they've been bracing for 31.3 or 31.4, whatever that non-burn figure is. And then the report came out, I think it was... Monday or Tuesday, where it was like, oh no, he's taking 25. And it was just like, whoa, okay.
Durant is riding, he's riding the entire Love City, you know, thing going. He's in a tent somewhere smoking some very fun tobacco and just having fun sharing it. And, you know, he's having fun. I mean, he's enjoying where he's at right now. Everything is just kumbaya. And it's kind of wonderful, actually. Yeah.
I know, it's really nice. And he's back on Twitter, which is great. Everyone missed Kevin Durant on Twitter. I don't have a problem with it. Because, again, we've seen it with the Spurs. Dirk Nowitzki's been doing it for two decades with the Mavericks. The Heat all did it. They all took, like, $20 million less with LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh to team up. So, like, yeah, he didn't need to. I mean, he was allowed to take 31. He could have if he wanted to. And I think the Warriors would have been fine with that. But I'm also cool with him taking less. Like, good for him. If he feels financially secure and he wants to save his owners a few bucks now so they pay more down the line, that's fine. Like, you do you, Kevin Durant. None of us should criticize what he's doing. Because, frankly, if it was our teams, we'd all be ecstatic. Like, if Joel Embiid doesn't want a five-year max next year, and he's like, yeah, I'll sign for 4 years, $40 million, that's awesome. You know, whatever. None of this should be in a fan or a writer or a blogger's purview. Like, we should not, you know, it's bad enough that writers have control over the all NBA teams, which actually has severe ramifications, financial ramifications for people like, you know, Anthony Davis or Gordon Hayward or Paul George this year. Like, we should leave the money part out of it. So that's my
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Like, I saw some of the votes for all defensive team.
Oh my god.
I think Isaiah Thomas got a vote.
Yeah. Damian Lillard got a vote.
Lillard, if you're not going to take it seriously, when you actually can affect the player's paycheck, then you really shouldn't have that vote.
Right.
At all.
Exactly.
It seems irresponsible to me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So next time around, we will talk more about the free agent signings that come, or we'll hit some of the more minor ones as well. We'll also talk the big winners and losers of the offseason, and then we'll get into hot summer league take territory so you can finally rant and rave about Donovan Mitchell, Mort.
Oh, you mean the upcoming Rookie of the Year?
Right, the next Michael Jordan, as you have proclaimed
him. that I did not say. Come on now. By the way, in regards to loser in the summertime, like, let's rejoice a little bit, because there aren't a lot of losers. We can all, spoiler alert, but, you know,
I could think of one big one.
Oh, yeah, well, sure, there are a couple when you look back at the draft, but in terms of free agency, at least, like, big-time bad contract has been given out. That's amazing. This is July 6th, and we have not had a Timofey Mozgov contract.
That is true. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
It is. Well, it's wonderful.
You
want to
watch the world burn.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm kind of bummed, but that's kudos to NBA GMs for realizing that spending money just because you have it is a really bad idea. You can always save it and roll it over until next year. So... just again wanted to remind you all that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. Also, check us out on iTunes. We'd love it if you subscribe, download, leave some reviews. Any feedback would be great. And check us out on FanRag Sports at FanRag Sports on Twitter, and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. It will be very busy all summer. I'm still pumping out some fantasy takes about free agents. I'll have a fantasy preview coming out in August, one of every team every day. So lots of good stuff, even as we head into the dark days of the offseason. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined today by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
I will. I'm going to watch Spider-Man right now, so yeah.
Very jealous. You'll have to let us know how it is on the next episode.
I will.
All right.
Take care, Brian.
You too.
Motivation with Amazon Music.
You're still in bed? Didn't you go running?
Oh, I overslept. I'll go tomorrow.
I'm getting in the shower.
Alexa, set an alarm for 5 a.m. tomorrow to hard rock music.
Okay, I'm up.
The right song exactly when you need it. Amazon Music, the simplest way to listen to the music you love. New customers start your 30-day free trial at amazonmusic.com. Renews automatically, cancel anytime.